EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Garage is a production of EMSradio.com. You can find us on Facebook, just search EMS Garage. You can find us on Twitter at EMS Garage. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com, or call us, 303-720-6001.
This episode of the EMS Garage is brought to you by Audible.com. Over 85,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Get a free audiobook download for your MP3 or iPod. Just go to www.audibletrial.com/EMS Garage.
The EMS Garage.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. It's your weekly podcast about nothing, really. I'm your host, Chris Montero. No, actually, this week we're going to talk about a lot of good stuff. We're going to be talking about you can still get fired for your Facebook post by the inevitable David Koenig. He's awesome. We're also going to talk about liability for EMS licensing. And it was a post. I don't know if it's a post or an article on gems.com by Anne, and I can never pronounce her name right. I know she's from New Mexico, but I can never pronounce her name right. I can't pronounce last names unless they're easy. And then if we have a chance, we're going to talk about Dr. Bledsoe's article from GEMS, Assessing Trauma Patients Proves Difficult. And it's actually an interesting article about a day in the life at Las Vegas Fire. So, sorry, I feel a little off today. I just haven't, it's been a little weird weather here, so I haven't been sleeping. The wind's blowing, which is abnormal for here, and just keeps me up at night. So I'm a little off. So first is David Koenig. We're going to talk about your article. How are you, sir?
I'm well. I have my diet cherry Pepsi. I have my blackjack gum. I've got that feeling that there's something rank going on Facebook.
I love it. Hey, did you see what I put your name as last week in the garage?
Yes, yeah.
That was awesome.
I was laughing. I was like, that's awesome.
It was good. It was awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Also joining us tonight is Russell, or Russ Stein. Hello, sir.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad.
Right on.
Enjoying a nice little warm streak here, so it's much better than it was last week, where we had 6 inches of snow dumped on the ground. And
yeah, which is weird for Tennessee. Yeah.
People here don't know how to drive in snow, so naturally I was listening to the radio as we were waiting on a private ambulance company to show up to take our second patient, and the only thing I hear on the radio is Battalion 20. We're out of units. And then 20 minutes later, we're still out of units. And then one would get in service and automatically be assigned somewhere else. And then you'd hear, hey, we're out of units again. So
gotcha.
We were just slammed that day. I was glad it was over.
You know what's funny is even in Colorado, they don't know how to drive on snow. So it really doesn't matter. People still crash.
Yeah,
I don't think it's as much frequency as they would there, but you know, it's okay. I understand.
Yeah,
right on. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Also joining us after a long hiatus, Mr. Kyle David Bates. Hello, sir.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. Nice to hear you.
Yeah, likewise.
We missed you.
We haven't been able to meet our schedules. I've been busy.
You've been really busy.
Been real busy.
Conferencing and doing tons of stuff.
Conferencing, getting first few moments. Actually, the program off the ground and launched.
Nice. And a lot of stuff for Greg Fries.
A lot of stuff for Greg Fries. Shh.
Okay.
I'll
edit that out.
It's been on the back burner. No, it's okay. It's been on the back burner.
I'll edit it out.
Remind them.
He won't hear it. Hi, this is Greg Freeze. That's really cool. It's really cool. All right, right on. Well, thanks for coming on. Also joining us, Dr. Jeff Myers. Hello, sir.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, all the way from next door to Kyle.
Pretty much.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Right on. Well, thanks for coming on. And finally, the awesome Steve Wirth, Esquire. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, great to be here tonight.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. We're going to be talking about liability and things right up your alley. So it's perfect.
Cool.
Yeah. I knew you would love that.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of baited you a little bit this week. I'm like, ooh, if maybe he would come on. We're going to talk about liability.
You tempted me to come on and be up late here on the East Coast.
Right on. Well, I really appreciate it. And I think everybody does, too. We love having you on, and it's a lot of fun, so it's good.
Yes, it is.
So this week, and I'm going to let David, why don't you kind of set us up a little bit on the Facebook post that you wrote for EMS One, and then, you know, give a little bit of background on the firing at AMR, and then what happened, and then tell us why you took that position, and then I think Steve O'Rourke has some interesting comments about labor law, so go ahead.
Well, basically what happened was last year, I believe it was in the fall, the NLRB filed a complaint against AMR regarding the termination of one of their EMTs who supposedly was fired over comments that she made about a supervisor, some of them derogatory in a demeaning manner, referring to him as the agency code for a psychiatric patient on Facebook. The company took the stance of, well, no, that wasn't the only reason we fired her. We also fired her for these other reasons and so on and so forth. And they set a hearing date that was scheduled for the first week of February of this year. Surprisingly, towards the end of January, there was a postponement of the hearing date. The judge in Connecticut postponed the hearing because they were in talks with a settlement. And what ended up happening was there was actually no hearing, and therefore there was no legal ruling on whether or not what she said on Facebook was protected speech or not. What it was a settlement, and it was for an undisclosed amount of money. I know someone was floating around like an 8-figure number, and everything that I hear is that it's much, much less than that. Maybe like 5 or 6 figures tops. The other thing that was interesting about the settlement was that it forced AMR, AMR wasn't forced. They agreed to change their policies. They changed actually 2 policies. One was like an internet usage policy. Another one was a blogging policy regarding, you know, language in there that had like this blanket statement that you shall not represent the company in any way on the internet, and you shall not be disparaging towards the company on the internet and stuff like that. And, you know, that settlement came out, and all of a sudden, you know, what I heard from everybody was, oh, you see, they can't fire us for what we put on Facebook. They can. It's illegal. The NLRB says so, the federal government. And it's like, yeah, no. You know, I think it's important for responders, especially EMS providers, to realize that you can still get fired for the things that end up on Facebook. You know, just a couple examples being, there was a Fidney lieutenant who took a photo of an MDT screen and put that on Facebook. He was suspended, and I think he's still going through disciplinary action. There was the EMT who put up photos from a crime scene up on Facebook. You know, he actually pled guilty to official misconduct and was stripped of his certification. There was the paramedic who posted on Facebook a x-ray of a patient who had a very unique injury to a specific part of the body, along with the caption, "My ambulance service, you know, took this patient today." therefore putting a geolocation and a date timestamp to the actual X-ray, and therefore that was viewed as a patient identifier, and that person was terminated. So just because there has been a settlement doesn't necessarily mean that you can turn around and, you know, start Facebook posting stuff away. There are still things to watch out for.
Well, and I think several headlines after the settlement that came out were a little misleading. Officials rule Connecticut AMR wrongly fired medic for Facebook post. Well,
right. Yeah.
Technically, no. So, I mean, the headline, and a lot of people, and in our society, a lot of people just read the headlines and go, oh, well, she was vindicated, and move on. And I think that's exactly what you're hinting, gosh, man, something like Russell there. Hinting at. Is that good, Russell? Huh? Is that good? Hinting at?
Considering how I'm not originally from Tennessee, that would be a no.
I'm trying. Anyway, so hinting at the fact that, you know, they really were out of line. And that's unfortunate because I think that it doesn't tell the whole story. So I really liked your blog post because it really kind of brought together everything that I thought about the case. And it really kind of sewed it up for me a little bit. And it also told me that, you know, it was out of court. It was a settlement and nobody really ever made a ruling. They made a change, right, and it's done. So,
right. Yeah. It's a settlement. And, you know, I mean, now's the time for agencies to turn around and look at their policies, whether they have a specific social media policy or not. If they don't have one, maybe now's the time to get one. You know, look at their policies and look and see, did they turn around and make these kind of, you know, blanket measures in their policies? And that's something that, you know, in the future could, you know, prove troublesome for them. You know, in internet policies like that are hard because it's hard to enforce to begin with, you know. So if it's a policy that's so hard to enforce, and then when you do enforce it, you know, now with the settlement, yes, it's a settlement. It's not a ruling. It kind of calls into question, you know, because AMR now has to change their policies. Are these type of blanket policies, you know, a liability to an agency, or are they an asset? And that's what agencies really need to do.
So, Steve, here we go.
Yes.
Three questions for you. One, as an agency, do I need a policy for social media? Two, is this precedent setting? I mean, is it something that we should be looking toward for the future? And three, do I, you know, what if I'm a paramedic and I'm on Facebook and I like somebody, you know, and I can push the like button or I can comment on somebody else's post about, you know, another company or a patient or whatever happened, nothing HIPAA protected now. Let's stay out of that realm. But that idea that maybe it could kind of cross the line, but it was on my own personal time. And I just said, hey, I like that post or whatever. Am I protected? And at what point am I not?
Well, I guess I'd start out by saying I agree with everything David has said. There's a lot of things that you can do with Facebook that can cause you to get fired outside of the realm of this particular case involving AMR. And as a disclaimer, I just want to say I have nothing to do with AMR, and our firm is not involved in this case in any way. So like you all, I'm just sitting out as an outside observer looking at it. But I was also amazed at the commentary about it, and it was basically an overreaction. First of all, this case was never in court, as in courts as in that we deal with every day. This was a issue before the National Labor Relations Board, which is the federal agency that governs the union relationship, the relationship between unions and employers in the private sector. So that's important. The hearing was going to be before an administrative law judge, and the hearing stemmed from a series of several unfair labor practice charges against the employer, in this case, by the union. So there were several charges. The statement made on Facebook and the policy was just one of a number of charges. So to answer, I guess, your third question, this settlement means nothing, absolutely nothing in terms of direction for employers
other than to be careful and to look at those policies to make sure they're not overly restrictive. But frankly, you can still get fired for calling your boss a mental patient. You could get fired for disparaging your organization in most situations, particularly where there is no labor union in place. Employment is at will of either party. So folks out there still need to be careful about what they say, because this settlement certainly gives them no license to just criticize their employer in a public forum through Facebook or through other blogs or what have you. So I'd go so far as to say that, you know, the law really hasn't changed any here, but it does require employers to look at their policies to make sure they're not deterring employees from exercising their legal rights and so forth. And there are certain things that employers have to allow employees to talk about wages, certain terms and conditions of employment. Employees could talk among themselves. But there has not been a decision by the National Labor Relations Board or any court that I'm aware of where this where a court has said that employees have free rein to criticize their employer in this kind of forum. So that's going to come. This is a whole new area, and we're going to see a lot, you know, happening over the next couple of years in terms of litigation and NLRB actions and so forth. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, Steve, it's new, but is it really that new? I mean, if we think that the internet is just, I guess for me, would it be any different than print media or something, where I can't really write an article, a letter to the editor and say, my employer sucks for the following reasons? And should we be taking that kind of tact with the internet? Yeah, it's faster, but beyond that, it's kind of the same thing. It's out there for everybody to read.
Right. It's a new technology, and it is new. The problem you have, Chris, is that it takes courts several years to catch up to anything. You know, I mean, the law moves very slowly, so there just have not been cases dealing with this. Now, last fall, the general counsel for the National Labor Relations Board, there was an opinion written by the general counsel, and basically the general counsel upheld a policy that was somewhat restrictive of employees' rights to speak out on the internet, as long as it didn't interfere with their protected rights under the National Labor Relations Act. So, and the other issue that comes into play here, the National Labor Relations Act protects employees and allows them the right to join a union, participate in union activities, to not join a union, to not participate in those activities, and to be protected from retaliation by an employer for engaging in those activities. The clause that comes into play here is a clause in Section 7 of the Act, which says that the Act also protects employees when they engage in concerted activity for mutual aid or protection. Concerted activity for mutual aid or protection. In other words, they get together, several employees get together, at least two, you know, concerted means at least two, get together and talk among themselves or approach an employer as a group because of some issue that is necessary to protect their safety. Classic example of this was a case in the 1980s in New England involving a private ambulance company where the owner of that company was an outright nasty fellow, if you will, and didn't listen to employees, and they were operating ambulances that were unsafe. And employees individually would come to the owner and say, hey, you know, those tires are bald, the brakes are bad, those vehicles are unsafe. And the employer's answer was, just shut up and go out and run the vehicles or you'll get fired, that kind of thing, okay? Well, you know, after all these employees go to the employer individually, five or six of them get together and go and meet with the employer and say, look, we're not going to run those vehicles. They're unsafe. As a group, we're not going to do that. And guess what the employer said in response to that when they got together and met with him in his office?
You're fired.
Exactly. So in that case, it was clear that the employees had come together in concerted activity for mutual aid and protection from the harshness of this employer. Now, and there are certain elements of safety and protection and so forth that come into play here. I don't think that that gives an individual employee the right to, as you said earlier, write a letter to the editor or post a post on Facebook, my supervisor sucks, this place is terrible, I don't know why I work here, et cetera. You know, anyone who wants to come here should think twice about it. Whatever the negative comment might be, I mean, organizations have a reputation uphold, and we are in public safety, which means that, you know, the public has to have a degree of confidence in the organization that's responding to their emergency calls. So it'll be interesting. I believe in a different context that the labor board may well uphold the employer side of this to some extent. So we'll see what happens.
Well, what does the rest of the panel think? Do you guys agree, or do you have a different opinion about this?
I gotta agree. I think that if you're going to a company because there's issues in terms of dangerous actions, dangerous vehicles, taking care of it with the employer is one way of doing it, and gathering together as a collective bargaining unit or union or however you want to go about doing it is one way. But when you just start flaming people online on Facebook, I think that's coward. I think it's a coward way out. It's easy, and you know. I agree with you, Chris. You know, you're getting into the aspect of what's any different than that, than me publishing it in a magazine or a newspaper, especially if it's false. And if I'm an employee working for that company and the public sees this behavior, what are they going to think about me? And what are they going to think about the service that I'm giving? And we start to talk about how we need to be a profession, and that's not professional behavior.
Great points. I don't think you see many physicians and nurses out there disparaging what they do. I mean, I think that we can all talk about a bad day, but I don't think that it necessarily crosses over that line of, you know, this person sucks or what. I mean, I think
I think you're right. I think too, you know, and I guess my point of this is that there's a lot of writings that have been out there, and a lot of people may be thinking, oh, this AMR case now means that as an employee, I could say whatever I want to about my employer or my supervisors on Facebook if it's on my own time. And that's not true. So, you know, this case has no precedence whatsoever. And again, it's in a unionized environment where the labor union pushed the issue. And if you're in a private sector employment situation where there is no labor union, the likelihood of this coming up to the labor board to this level is going to be pretty slim anyway. So, but yeah, there's a lot out there. I like what Kyle said. You know, I mean, you got to use some common sense, I think, is what he's saying. And you know, I think the bottom line rule is I try to use it when I post things on Facebook or whatever is, you know, what would your mother think of this, or how to look on the front page of the newspaper, and what would other people think before you post, you know? And that's, unfortunately, we've seen, you know, I've seen people fired for things they posted on Facebook. In one case, an EMT was in the back of an ambulance with a patient. Instead of taking care of the patient, was sitting in the captain's chair with his feet propped up on the stretcher doing his Facebook status that said something to the effect, bored today, transporting another Gomer from the nursing home to the hospital. Oh. And, you know, and that's tame compared to some other ones that I know people have posted and they lost their jobs over outright stupidity and not thinking about what you're doing and not having rules. Like, for example, Facebook and digital devices, personal devices, phones, whatever, an employer has an absolute right to say you can't be using those when you're in an ambulance with a patient. You know, you can't be using them when you're driving. You know, you could only be using them at the workplace when you're done with your other work, just like, you know, when you can watch TV, you know, or when you can access a computer for personal use. You know, the employer has the right to establish some of those kind of rules. And, you know, in most cases, it's employment at will unless there is a labor union in place and a collective bargaining agreement that changes that to just cause as being the criteria to terminate someone or to discipline them. So that gives some protection for employees, but you can still be accountable for what you do off duty in a lot of cases.
So, Steve, let me throw you a quick curveball. What about,
Sure. So
you said NLRA Section 7 covers employees' concerted activities. Is that
For mutual aid or protection.
Right. Now, what if people are, what if these employees and the group of them are either doing one of two things? They're in a chat talking, or they're doing comments back and forth on somebody's Facebook wall talking about an issue, perhaps like the one you had said before, talking about the safety of the ambulances and maybe how we need to go talk to the boss. Is that, would that be protected?
Well, perhaps some of that could be protected. And I think the problem is this law was written in 1935. It was basically in an era when people were face to face with each other in terms of their interactions. So now we're doing the thing we would have normally done face to face, like the example I gave you earlier with the tires and the brakes and going to the boss's office. Now you have this out on the out in cyber world, and everybody can see it. That's a difference, big difference there. So I think the NLRB is going to be treading some new ground here when these cases start to come up, because the normal context in which this protected concerted activity has evolved is in right at the work site, you know, right in the workplace. Job actions, leaving as a group, leaving because the equipment is unsafe and violates OSHA rules. Approaching a boss as a group because of issues about safety and then getting fired, you know, on the spot. That's the context that these decisions have been rendered. Haven't seen any yet in the context, as you said, what about discussing those very issues in a blog? But what if that blog, those involved in it, are not employees of that organization? They're others, friends of friends and so forth, and the access goes beyond the workplace to now a realm where it could affect the reputation of the organization. And, you know, allegations that aren't the truth could subject the person to claims of defamation and slander and all that stuff too. That's another thing we haven't even mentioned is, you know, when you start calling a supervisor, something that's not true on Facebook or print it in the newspaper or on a blog, you know, you're still going to be accountable to the general law of defamation too.
Well, let me ask, were concerted efforts ever considered in the, say, when back in the days when we actually had phone lines into our house, and if you had a person or two on a phone talking to another person or two, was that considered protected?
I don't know of any cases where that type of situation arose before the labor board. But, you know, with a telephone, of course, it's more limited. You know, usually it's one person talking to another. Certainly you could have a speaker phone. You can have maybe join a third party. But that's not blasting out into the general realm of being accessible to a lot of other people. You know what I mean? So most of the cases here deal with job action and stuff that is things that have happened right in the workplace, you know. So this is really going to be new territory for the labor board when a case like this, and this was not a good case anyway, to go up to the labor board for the purpose of looking at Facebook policies, because this was riddled with several other unfair labor practice charges, like one being not having the employer allegedly did not allow the employee in this case to have a union representative present during an investigatory interview, which is required and, you know, which is a right under the National Labor Relations Act. There were several other things. So most of the time when a union brings complaints, they bring first charges, a charge of an unfair labor practice charge. And then the labor board investigates those and determines whether there's enough evidence to issue a complaint. And that's what happened here. They found enough evidence to at least issue a complaint, meaning it would then go to the fact finder, being the administrative law judge. It never even got to the ALJ. So, you know, it's settled on a variety of grounds, which I'm not aware of. And, you know, all it said in the news release from the NLRB was something to the effect that at the end of it, it said something that the employer agreed to make some changes to their, you know, policy to make it, to ensure that it didn't interfere with employee rights under the act or something like that. Something very general, you know, so I don't know what changes they'll actually make to their policy. I suspect there won't be that many changes actually made, but that's just my suspicion. But I haven't seen their policies, so I don't know.
Gotcha.
Now, I got something.
Go ahead, Russ.
Well, what about the National Labor Relations Act? That pertains to private sector employees, correct?
Correct, yes.
What are some protections for the public sector?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Most public sector employees that work for municipalities, cities, towns, fire districts, you know, ambulance districts and so forth, typically they come under the purview of state labor relations acts. You know, just about every state has its own state labor relations law that parallels, in many cases, the National Labor Relations Act, particularly in the area of employee rights to speak out and to organize and to, you know, talk about certain terms and conditions of employment with other employees and so forth. So, yeah, that would come under state law. And there are, every state's a little bit different, you know, in terms of what rights public sector employees have. But very similar protections are given there. And another common misconception that people have is that the National Labor Relations Act only protects you, only applies to the unionized workforce. That's not true. The act does apply even if you don't have a union in place. So if an employee gets fired for organizing a union in a lawful way in the workplace and there is no union there, if it's a private sector employer, if that person gets fired because they passed out union authorization cards while during break time or downtime when work activities are completed and so forth, that's protected right. If the employer terminates them, that employee could actually file a charge with the National Labor Relations Board, and it would be investigated. So it protects employees whether they're organized by union or not.
Wow, that's did not know that. That's
yeah, a lot of people don't know that. It's because the reason being is that most of the time employees don't have, you know, the resources to take a charge to the labor board. They don't know what to do. We're going to see more of that now that the National Labor Relations Board, by the way, has a very good website, NLRB.gov. And they've got, you could literally go through a question and answer thing on their site, and the labor board, you know, the little questionnaire thing will spit out an answer for you to tell you if you think they think you might have a cause to file a charge against your employer. So there's a lot of good material for both employees and employers on that site. So it's a really good resource.
Dr. Myers, do you have any thoughts on this?
I agree with Kyle. It comes back to professionalism. I think the everybody has complaints. There is nothing that is perfect in terms of our work environments. However, as a professional, you need to address those in a constructive manner, in an attempt to change the situation. And whether that means the company or hospital or whoever, whatever the employer is, changes, or whether you change your location by finding a new job, we need to remain professional. Anything that gets out into the internet is, like you said, just like putting an ad in the New York Times. It's out there for the public to see.
Yep, good point.
Great point.
Can I just say how angry this whole thing makes me? You know, we've been dealing with this. How many times
Kyle,
we talked about this topic?
How angry does this make you?
It makes me just
mad. All right, this whole topic, how many times have we been dealing with the topic of Facebook and social media and improperly using it? And it makes us look like a bunch of kids.
Well, this is something, though, that the internet has been experiencing for a long time. In fact, they have a term for it called the never-ending September effect. Whereas, and this goes back before the World Wide Web, when Usenet groups every September would get a rush of college freshmen who now had internet, quote-unquote, accounts and had no idea what to do with it. And as soon as AOL opened the gateway, it became what was known as the never-ending September effect. And what it is it's just about understanding online etiquette. You know, and that's something which I could probably go back to 2009, you know, when Greg Fries and I first launched PIO, socialmediatraining.com. And one of the first things that we talk about is, look, you know, there is this thing called online etiquette, and you can call it netiquette, you can call it online etiquette, but it's proper behavior. Whether you're a professional or not, whether you're in EMS or not, even if you're you know, just a regular person, if you're a college student, you know, here are some things that really you should turn around and try to follow. And we say the term common sense. I wish that everyone at, you know, had my level of common sense, because then, to be honest with you, I probably wouldn't be employed anymore because they'd all be doing the right thing. But that's just not the case. And what it takes is education. And that's something which I think that EMS agencies and, you know, not specifically EMS agencies, I think there are fire departments and police agencies and emergency management groups that are failing to educate their responders correctly about social media and what the agency's expectations are when it comes to social media. From their
You're right. I agree with that. I think one of the big problems is employers haven't established good policies. They haven't communicated their expectations to the staff. And, you know, I deal with it every day. And, you know, you got everybody out there on an ambulance or a fire engine, and you got everything from helmet cams to, you know, the phone on your BlackBerry to, you know, your iPhone to whatever, you know, and these things are so portable now, it's such a temptation to just pull the thing out and snap a couple pictures. It is out of hand. I mean, just a month or so ago, there was that terrible case of that girl who hit the tree, you know, a single occupant driving a car hit a tree head on and was killed with massive head injuries. And there's this 20-second or so, you know, video clip that somebody did with their BlackBerry.
Oops.
Was callous. You know, it was as if they were treating that poor girl like an inanimate object. And the family, this was emailed to them after it got emailed to God knows how many, you know, other firefighters. And it got emailed to the family. And one of the things they said in the interview on the Today Show in November in the morning, they said, you know, the video was bad enough, but to hear these responders talking about their loved one in an uncaring way that lacked compassion, it made them question whether they actually did their best to try to save her life, you know. And we just got to get control over these devices out in the field and get control over, you know, what folks are saying and posting and blogging about so that they know what the expectations are and what's right and what's wrong. It is a whole new area of, I guess, David, you call it netiquette. Is that it? Net etiquette?
Yeah. Something like that. Netiquette, online etiquette. It's just, you know, just being, you know, courteous online and, you know, avoiding the flame wars, you know, stuff like that. You know, I mean, I lived through the flame wars of the 90s on AOL, so I understand exactly how damaging it can be and what a time suck it can be, you know, because it just envelopes you. And then there really becomes no point in being online.
And again, I mean, I can literally write that same post, publish it once every 3 months, and it, you know, I will continuously get hits on it, you know, from people searching for it. The problem is that it's not the problem. The people who are searching for it aren't the problem. It's the people right. who aren't. And those are the right. people that we need to turn around and reach.
Yeah, exactly. We need to do a better job of that. That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, Kyle just cracks me up a little bit because he's just give me a little bit of liberty here, Kyle. You just kind of remind me of that guy that was probably around when the Gutenberg press started. Man, I don't understand. Why do they have to print it? I never needed the Bible printed. It was all fine. Now they're printing it. And so progress, dude. Progress. That's all I'm
saying. But, you know, it's not the progress thing. It goes down to one simple thing. And it's something that we've noticed that we've had, I think, a general decline in is respect.
Yes. Okay, good
and,
point.
And
good
that's
point.
Really what it comes down to, Chris. It's not the technology because, you know, something they were doing it with, people would stand up and yell at. People would write it, you know, a note. There's always ways to communicate their problems and get it out there. And it was being done. It's a little bit easier now, but it was being done. But the thing is, it comes right down to the bottom line, is there's a lack of respect for what we do. There's a lack of respect for the patients and our coworkers. And I hate to say it, whether I like them or not, but the people who sign your paycheck.
Well, you know what's funny? Well, you're right. And I think that a little bit of it is with this fast communication, we can send things out without thinking. And
yes.
You know, when you could, definitely. Before when you could write a letter, at least you could, you know, there's times when I sit and I write an email and I'm just like, ugh, and I put it in my saved box and I go to sleep and I wake up in the morning and I go delete. It's kind of the same kind of thing where you take the old letter and you throw it away in the trash because you just have to take time to think. But if you're blasting it out in 140 characters on Twitter or in a wall post on Facebook, once you hit send, it's not coming back. And you just have to remember that.
Yeah, if I just throw in, the technology allows us to react emotionally instead of responding thoughtfully.
Yes. Ooh, good point.
You know, which is what you're talking about when you write a letter, or, you know, you have to think before you put pen to paper. Now we see something pop onto our screen and we immediately have a gut reaction. We start typing, we hit send, and oh my God, there it goes. You know, yeah, it's reaction.
That's absolutely true. And let's not forget. I mean, you know, there are times when things happen accidentally, and it's a lot easier to have accidents in social media. Just the other night, the Red Cross. Turned around and sent out a tweet about getting Dog's Head beer, and you know, it was an accidental tweet. Someone was using Hootsuite and they were on the wrong account, and they sent a tweet about getting Dog's Head beer. And you know what the Red Cross did was they were like, wow, okay, that happened, so what do we do? And what they did was actually intelligent in that, you know, they turned around and admitted that it was a quote-unquote rogue tweet. That nobody's drunk, everybody's sober, and, you know, they turned around and apologized for it. And I think that that's something else which, you know, people aren't necessarily used to doing is realizing when they're wrong and then apologizing for it.
Yep, I would agree with that. And, well, and taking ownership of it. Everybody can apologize.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, I hate the people that go, I apologize for that. It's like, no, say I'm sorry. That's a lot harder to say. Sorry, you know.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, you know, and they were completely honest, and you know, their followers were not upset by it because they were honest about it, and they did apologize, and you know, they got donations out of it because Dog's Head Beer turned around and said, hey, you know, even the Red Cross has a hard day. How about we turn around and we donate, you know, 10% of the sales from whichever beer it was that was accidentally mentioned for the next month to the Red Cross.
Ah, and great.
Yeah. It's a great ending. It's a great case of here's something that happened accidentally and here's a great way of handling it. And unfortunately, when people do things, they don't necessarily think along those lines or think it through when accidents happen.
Well, and I think as leaders of an organization, you have to think about that too and go, you know, there's times when we have to just suck it up and just say we're wrong. I know the lawyers are like, oh, never say you're wrong. But you know what? I think sometimes that little apology goes a long way. And when somebody goes, you know, I've made mistakes in my career and I've made mistakes with patients or whatever, and never been sued yet, knock on wood, 20 some years in EMS. But gosh, every time that I've gone back and I've apologized or I've admitted the mistake, people are like, yeah, good job. Thanks. You know, thanks for admitting that. Thanks for understanding it. I hope you can grow and learn from that. Cool. You know, there are a few people that probably wouldn't be that way, but I think for the most part in our society, that's what people really deep down want. They don't, you know, they're going to sue you for money or whatever, but if you would have just admitted it up front, you could have saved yourself a lot of headache in the back.
Well, you know, they actually, there was actually something published in, I think it was, New England Journal of Medicine, or it was an opinion article or something about medical lawsuits. And they said that one doctor's actually said that he had a family that was threatening to sue him. And he just wrote him a letter that said, listen, I made a mistake. I didn't, you know, it wasn't intentional. It was based off the information that we had at the time. So, you know, and as time went on, we later found that, you know, this wasn't the case and we made a mistake. And that family ended up dropping their lawsuit because
yeah, we see that
all,
a lot.
That's all they truly wanted.
Yeah, apologies are a good thing in most cases. We advocate that when we deal with difficult situations, whether it be an error or actual negligence. You know, you know, it's all about how you make the patient feel and how you make the family members feel. You know, it's not so much the things we do and it's how we make them feel. And that gets right to that importance of an apology at the right moment.
Exactly.
I think everybody understands that we all make mistakes and that you gain respect by admitting that that you made a mistake. I think we all feel that from people who apologize to us, and it certainly comes the other way.
Well, we are at almost 50 minutes. And I think if we go into the liability, it's probably going to be another 50 minutes. So I'm going to ask you guys, do you want to talk about liability? Save it for another time. What do you want to do? Because I could go either way. And I'm going to kind of leave it. I know you guys on the East Coast, it's late. So I'm going to leave it up to you tonight, what you would like to do.
Well, I'm probably going to have to sign off.
All right, perfect. Well, then that's it.
That you guys... feel free to carry on without me, but I'd be happy to join you again some other time, too, just to keep me posted. I'll jump on whenever I'm available.
All right. Well, we'll talk about Winnie's article another time, and then because I'd really like to get your opinion on delegated practice versus what were considered licensed. And I think that it's an interesting concept when people go, oh, I'm certified. No, I'm licensed. Well, really, it's the same thing. And I think we've gotten lost in the jargon.
Yeah.
To really understand what that means. So
maybe we can get her on here, too.
Yeah, I have her email, so maybe I'll see.
Yeah, she's a nice lady. And we've known her, and she's been a good friend for many years. She's very good.
Great. Well, I will do that. And so let me do a couple things, and we'll get you guys off here. First, I'd like to say we didn't get a chance mid-roll, but we'll do it now. We're brought to you by Audible. Audible.com. or audibletrial.com/EMS Garage. This week I chose a brand new novel by John Grisham. You know, we have a lawyer on. We should talk about lawyer things. So The Confession, a novel by John Grisham. Every genre, sci-fi, one of my favorites, romance, comedy, business, thrillers, anything you could think of. So you can go over there. You can get a 14-day free trial, one download of a free book. If you decide at the end of the 14 days you don't want it, cancel the subscription and it's yours. The book is yours. You can keep it. You can do what you want with it. Put it on your iPod, your Zune, your computer, your Droid X like me, or whatever MP3 player of your choice. They really do support a lot of things. So thank you, audible.com, for supporting our podcast, audibletrial.com/EMS Garage. Go over there. Also, would like to thank EMS Today. They are sponsoring us to come to EMS Today in Baltimore, March 1st through the 5th. We'll be in town having some fun and doing a lot of podcasting. We're pretty excited about that. So find us booth 1811 on the show floor. We'll be podcasting anytime that the show floor is open. You will find a podcast going. So come on by. We'll see you there.
See you there.
All right. Hey, Steve, thanks. And where can people find you or get in contact with you?
Well, you can just go to our website, pwwemslaw.com.
Very
thanks.
Cool. Thank you, sir. Mr. Kyle David Bates, where can people find you? You awesome man.
Oh, yeah. You can find me at KyleDavidBates.com, at ImageMedic on Twitter. You can find me over at my two other projects, FirstFewMoments.com, as well as PDU, PEDI-U.com.
I promise I will make it on one of those podcasts soon. Uh-huh. Maybe you don't want me on there, but I promise I'll try. You always do them weird. You've been on? You always do them at weird times, like Friday night at 11:32. Like,
I have not been on that. So first few moments usually at 10 o'clock.
I know. I'm teasing you. Thank you. Dr. Jeff Myers, where can people find you?
I can be found on the website at photoemsdoc.com, photoemsdoc.com. I'll be down at EMS today, and we'll see you there.
I know I got an email this week from our executive producer, and she's like, I need your list of people that said they were coming on the show. I'm like, I don't know. I just told them to contact you. I thought they were contacting you. So I know you're coming on my show, so I'll get with you and talk to you about that. Mr. Russell Stein, where can people find you?
As always, at hybridmedic.com and emsblogs.com production, and at hybridmedic on Twitter and hybridmedic blog on Facebook, and that's about it for the moment.
Right on. Very cool. And finally, Mr. David Koenig, where can people find you? I always want to say, and in this corner. For some reason, you have that presence, which is awesome.
No, that's just because I'm from New York.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. I'm at David Koenig on Twitter. As the listeners now know, you can find me at EMS1.com. I have a new column over there, over at EMSblogs.com. And I will be at EMS today. In fact, on Friday at 5:15, I will be in the session Fired for Facebook, 15 Steps to Using Social Media Legally and Safely.
Very cool, dude.
I think we're doing that one.
Are you both doing it together?
No. I was actually in the session last year too, and I liked it a lot. And I don't know what it is why they give social media the Friday 5 o'clock slot. I would think it would be prime time, but
yep. Well, we'll be there. We'll see you there, David.
I'll be there.
All right, and you guys need to come on my podcast. I'll get to you guys then. And we're only doing three of ours, and I know there's a bunch of others coming on. So, in fact, I think we're doing so many podcasts this time that we have we actually have a scheduling problem. So it's a good thing. I didn't realize a few years ago when we brought all these people together to do a podcast at an EMS conference that in just two or three short years we would actually have a problem scheduling everybody. So it makes me happy, and I actually appreciate everybody listening. So, and finally for me, thanks for listening. Geeky Medic on all the websites, Facebook, Twitter, whatever else you want to find. But you can, more importantly, you can email us, emsgarage@gmail.com. Join us next week when we talk about, more about issues that concern you and EMS. I can't even talk tonight. My brain, I have had no sleep. Oh my goodness. See you guys next week.